Hello, and welcome to today's episode where I talk about geeky, nerdy voice actors who happens to have a better intro than this episode. Welcome to the channel, and this is Edward's Review. We are recapping on episodes 4, 5, and 6 of The Legend of Vox Machina Season 2. And with that being said, this past weekend was very crazy, so hopefully I'm able to get this through before the recap of the live show. And this is something that it happened like last year, where I talk about the episodes and how I'm portraying thinking about it, but at the same time giving you guys a look back on how that jump from here. And then when we have the live recap, we will be having talks from the cast, our host Mika Burton, as well as some key background of the behind the scenes of how the episode was made. So okay, let's go ahead and start with today's episode, where we started with episode 4, Those Who Walk Away. For those who are just recently jumped in, I do recommend to jump back for episodes 1 through 3 of The Legend of Vox Machina Season 2. But just to give a bit of a recap, we as critters who saw the last episode, episode 3, that Vexalia became unalive, and because of Percy touched the Death's Ward, which is the vestigial that the Matriarch of Ravens bestowed upon her champion with. So, okay, so we open up with episode 4, Those Who Walk Away, with a darkened campsite surrounded by skulls and pitchforks in the dark. It is revealed that Vexalia was among the captured people that was in the camp, because of Vexalia opening the lock that trapped her. In a means of escaping from the campsite, they find themselves dunking into a bear's trap. Now, sadly, this bear that they find is gravely injured, and out of sheer mercy and gracious respect, Vexalia then unalive this bear due to its suffering that they feel that they need to unsuffer for it. But almost a split second after doing the deed, it's little revealed that there's a baby bear that was captured that was not injured. It was actually literally just roped up. And thanks to Vexalia, she was able to literally unhook the bear, which is an adorable scene. And that's how we are introduced to Trinket in animation. I believe in the campaign, there was a backstory that talks about it. But just seeing this unfolds by the hand, it's literally, you know, it's literally a heartbroken moment to see how not only the twins survive outside of their father's influence, but also seeing how the relationship between them and the bear is. So jumping back to present after the episode intro, we're back in the crypt, or which is the temple. And sure enough, they're trying their best to revive Vexalia by any means, until Zarya and Cash shows up back from whatever hidden passage that they try to find, to see the group literally surrounding her in many ways. So Cash immediately does this resurrection spell, which is in many ways difficult for a cleric or a person of high order, if you will, to do. But at the same time, as they're trying to resurrect Vexalia, Vexel Dan literally is seeing the Matriarch of Raven going towards her. And this is literally her area, her expertise of unaliving, so to speak, you know? So, of course, that out of turn, or out of a way of being defiant of seeing how Vex'ahlia is going to be taken away by the Matriarch, he offers his position, he offers himself in her place, which ergo allows him to be sacrificed for the Matriarch, and she gladly accepts that. But in by doing so, she separates the ties with Vex'ahlia and Vexel Dan, to realizing that in order for this to work, it's literally out of his hands that he has to endure wearing the now Vesicil armor that surrounds him instead of the person who worried, which is Pervan Soul. As Vex'ahlia awakens from her mini slumber, if you will, they gave her a quick up to date of what happened after Percy touched the armor. And now that that it's found its way to Vexel Dan, the group has no choice but to, you know, work with whatever they have. But even so, Zarya is, you know, she's a little salty in a way, to think about it. So she devised a way or a plan to do something with that. The moment they get out of the room, a whisper, if you will, leads over to a tapestry or a depiction wall for Vex'ahlia to see a several groups of people on there, and the description on the wall is definitely from that 4-episode one shot that Matt Mercer put together, and it is a depiction of the calamity that happened before the rise or the creation of Tal Dorei. And by doing so, it shows a battle because Vex'ahlia then gets this weird vision, seeing all the deities looking among their people, pretty much doing something else. But then it also reveals the Sphinx, Osisa's mate, that she mentioned. Sadly, it's been sealed away in a mountain. And sure enough, we have our character, the soldier or the warrior that had the armor on. Of course, this gives a way for Cash and Zarya to walk ahead of the group, which gives us this whole new weird way of her trying to devise a plan to, like, get the armor for take it for the take, which, I mean, it's obvious, but even so, Zarya decides to use the amulet that's around her neck that we saw in the third episode, yes, the last episode, to summon this one-eyed creature with tendrils, attacking Vakmakino right there in one room that is, like, really shouted and everything. But as they go on to attack, of course, Percival with his new pepper box does at least some damages, but not enough to defeat this creature. And sure enough, Pike saves Percy by forming her shield against the attack, but hitting both of them at the same time. Unsuccessfully, Grog did charge with Craven Edge towards the creature, but he finds himself getting petrified into stone against the wall, which pretty much nulls his ability to move or do anything, and it's very weird. But at the same time as the group is having a fight and having Zarya and Cash being off on the sideline, Vexel then yet has another vision of the calamity, and he is finding himself going against he is going against Pervan as a means of battling within his own demons in a way. As Vox Machina group is literally being picked one by one by this creature, Kaz, unconflicted of knowing that this is wrong and knowing that this shouldn't have happened, he had no choice but to can't sit idly by seeing these people, you know, who actually did risk their lives and almost die for this one piece of legendary item to just be taken away by a creature of sorts by a means of stealing it. So Cash jumps into the fray, trying to free up anyone who's been recently pacified around his area. And yet, sure enough, this made Zarya's mind reconsider, because this is not a warrior's way. This is actually an honorable deception, if you will. So even if they did take the armor, the guilty would just know that they just took it out of spite and not for anything other than their own personal gain. So, of course, Zarya did kind of stop the creature's attack. And then, you know, it is unfortunate that she also get herself petrified, because she was the only one who was able to release this creature to actually also bring it back. So that's kind of like closing the book, so to speak. So that is very terrible for their part. At the same time, Vexildan is like literally not winning against this battle with Pervan, and it's simultaneously going with both the creature attacking the remaining members of Vox Machina and Pervan against the new wearer, which is Vexildan. In a small moment, Scanlan and Pike were like holding each other in a way, to a point where it is kind of like almost like a mini love story, somewhat little, that he doesn't want to see the cleric go quickly, and she doesn't want to see the bard to be petrified either. So ironically, they both at one arm's length, holding each other's hands, are petrified at the same time. So it pretty much kind of dulls the, you know, emotions right there. Before even the creature almost attacks Vexelia, Trinket, our wonderful bear, the little cub that we saw before seeing him being full-grown armored, did put up a fight against the creature, but evidently did also get himself petrified as a means of, you know, attacking this creature. So, and over to Vexildan's side, it is a last attempt that he is going against Pervan, realizing that Vexelia is like a version of Vexelia is right in front of her, uttering the words that is definitely out of his control. And that makes him feel accepted that this should happen, this has to happen, I'm gonna let it happen. And by allowing Pervan strikes him down, he doesn't really go down, he emerged in a way as the new vegetable wearer of the Death Ward, allowing him to use the full access of the armor that is now given by the Matron of Raven as her new champion. So this awakens him, as well as the armor power that he imbued with, allowing him to be a little faster than normal on getting rid of, you know, the threat. So he noticed that the only member is left is Cash, and he allows him to free the others as much as he can by giving them the time by defeating this creature with his blades. Of course, that after when the creature is dispatched, which is, you know, defeated, Vex'ahlia did notice that these things were happening while they were not there. And despite that and how things are, both Zarya and Cash are very sorry for the deed that they did. And by doing so, they realizing that the Vestrials is in much capable hands than theirs, and with the secrets of Orsisa bestowed upon Vox Machina, they realize that whatever they're going to be doing, they're going to need these Vestrials to save the realm, or at least save Tal'Dorei, which is its people. That includes people in Vasselheim, regardless if they think otherwise. As they kind of like small patch up on their rocky relationship, they did notice that they're in a temple in underwater. So luckily that they escape by geysering, which is shooting out of the temple from its little area out of the little lake ocean, or out of the lake into dry land. After a few moments of rest, Percival did want to apologize to Vex'ahlia of the way how he is, you know, how he activated the ward's, you know, defenses, and he should have thought otherwise. But Vex'ahlia plainly, clearly just knocks Percival with one punch in the jaw. But even so, it was a means of him accepting his apology in some ways. So, of course, Cass and Zarya did make amends with Vox Machina, knowing that the vegetables that they've seen happening is able to be, you know, bought forth. Despite on the locket that Zarya has, she gave it to Vex'ahlia as a means of putting some sort of item or being in this pocket realm that the locket has. So clearly, I'm gonna like make a reference of an anime. So what Vex'ahlia does, she realizing that she wants to keep an eye on her bear, her animal companion. And by doing so, she now has means to have Trinket in the locket form, able to safely travel everywhere or anywhere that she wants. So she literally Pokeball Trinket. So just to, like, a little thought about it, think of a Pokemon, you know, you capture the creature, it goes in a little Pokeball, and then you summon it when you when you literally want to go into battle. Sure enough that, yes, everything has been cleared up and everything else. Sure enough, Vex'ahlia has this other weird vision, and it's about a barn with an elder couple in it, and the means of seeing the matron trying to unalive a couple, it's kind of weird. But at the same time, as he slowly turns, we see a decomposed zombie-like Vex'ahlia standing in the doorway, just staring at them. And this literally scares Vex'ahlia into whatever they're at right now with Vex'ahlia. And it's like, it's so weird that she sensed something's weird with him, but at the same time, he doesn't know how to explain it. He knows that deal that he did with the matron was only the way to bring her back to life. So it is super weird what else that the matron's gonna do to him while he's still wearing this armor. So far away from another land, or another town, or another village, if you will, a person is literally looking at this crystal ball, showing, I believe, Ellen Ripley, or whoever this was at this point, that they're walking into a town that is being decimated by the Como Clan Conclave. So that ends that episode of that one. this next one here, kind of love the somewhat star-studded voices here. Of course, this is episode 5, Pass Through the Fire. And we have Fred Tatiasororo being Corrin. He is voiced by... his voice is legendary, by the way. His voice is, you know, Hulk from the animated Avengers, and also Hulk in Agent of Smash. He is also voice of Soldier 76, which is the Overwatch character that we all know. And Fred's voice is like generally the kindest gentle giant you're ever gonna hear. Janet Vernon, I believe she is, I think, a legend Avatar the Airbender kind of person, I think. And this is just my thought on Janet. She is Janet is do forgive me, I'm trying to work with the idea of where am I hearing this voice from, but she is definitely from she was Korra from The Legend of Korra, which is the sequel to the Avatar the Last Airbender. She also has a lot of work in her repertoire, if you will. She was Wonder Woman in the Injustice animated DC film. She is also... forgive me. It is kind of like kind of hard, but at the same time, it's kind of easy because her voice has been carried throughout the years. And she portrayed a lot of things. That's outside voice work, believe it or not. For example, this TV series, Stand Against Evil. She plays, I think, Sheriff Evie Barrett. And, of course, can't stress this enough. She was also, Janet Brennan's character in Vox Machina is Valia, and she is literally Keyleth's mom, which ironically comes to young Keyleth, which is voiced by Crystal Regal. Yes, that is actually Sam's youngest daughter, voicing very young Keyleth in the whole thing. I literally had to double check this when I saw this, so bear with me. We also had Robbie Damon, that fine gentleman. I have actually met him. I kind of wish I had thrown him a D20 or something. He voiced the character C. Kronos. He is the headmaster of the Fire Asari in this episode, as well as familiar faces in Deirdre Vernon as Lady Alara, and Stephanie Beatrice Beowitz being Kima. We have seen these two ladies outside, respectfully, in certain realms. Of course, Ingira is, of course, the Torchwood alumni for just two episodes. But she's also from Game of Thrones, so just a bit of heads up. And I don't really need to explain about Stephanie Beatrice, because, of course, you whoever's fans of Brooklyn 99, yeah, it's easy to see her. But for those who haven't heard Maribel from Encanto, yeah, this is actually our second, she was our first one for the Encanto thing, but the second one was Osisa. Wait a minute, no, that's a No, I'm getting my Disney's wrong. I'm sorry. Yes, Mushishi was voiced by the lovely Alana Ubeck. She was Mama Imelda from Coco, whereas Stephanie Beatrice is Medivh from Encanto. So, back to the episodes talking about this one. And yes, this is a rather long episode, so bear with me. I do apologize for sidetracking a little. So, episode 5, we are opening up to a lovely little scenery of cherry blossoms in the mountains. Showing a lady who's about to prepare for her journeys, but pops out this young little redhead girl stopping her mother from doing a journey along the head. So, of course, and this is definitely an Airbender reference, if you will, or an Avatar reference, that the elements of air, fire, water, and earth has a balance that a person who is actually studying and harnessing these abilities to understand, to not only to control these abilities, but to bring harmony and balance among the, you know, evidential forces that insides within each element. Of course, you know, water quenches fire, fire melts rock, rock kind of stops the water. It's a lot of metaphorical elemental reasoning, but it's basically that everything that's around them is literally something to work around in a harmony base of this whole thing. The word Amante is pretty much in this episode is pronounced to be on the journey of not only of teachings but also self-discovery of what one's abilities can do. Her father, Korun, picks her up as her mother gets engulfed after passing through the gates into the mist, giving us our official ending of the first intro of all things. To find ourselves after the intro, to see Keyleth picking up sticks as the gust of wind that's happening around them, and she feels familiar with them. As the group's just like gathering around the fire and just realizing that Keyleth is near the place called Pyra, P-Y-R-A-H. Where the Fire Ashari group is resigned, that like literally the people who control fire and understanding fire, whereas she's an Air Ashari, which she understands the flow and air with. Sadly, this is the last place that it's been notified that her mom was last seen during her Armante or her journey. As much as they want to go and pay respects on going to Pyre, the matters of Tel'Dorei was pointed out by Vax'ildan that it needs to be defended against these dragons, the Comaclonclave, which is as soon as possible, because as soon as that's happening, that's quite the done deal. They can do what they normally would, but they resume their, you know, everyday challenge. Although we are now brought to to the part where Grog is talking to his sword, which was depicted in the campaign as Grog taking a deuce. And whenever by taking a deuce, he is dutying. Just to say a few, but even so, this was part of the campaign. That we at this very point know that he is actually talking to the sword, which is known as Craven Edge. And this is literally the primary weapon from last season, shown to us by Silas Briarwood, that he is now in, you know, an acquirement on seeing this. So, of course, Vexildan is, again, at the campsite during the whole looking over everyone, doing the Nightfall Watch. He is being plagued on seeing these, like, people unaliving, seeing his decomposed face in his visions. It's literally giving him mind jolts, and it is literally something for him to just, like, weird and getting shocked at. Like, he's seeing things that he shouldn't be seeing and all that. It's, like, really weird. And it startles the group, sadly. So, of course, the next morning comes, and there is a lot of things that Kael is picking up on the air for some weird reason. And during one of the times of the campfire, Vex'ahlia was going to be burning at the stake, so to speak, this item, this mystical item that he was going to pretty much cook the broomstick, which is in depiction of the campaign, was a magical broomstick that had held a lot of help with Vex'ahlia. So, of course, Scanlan was able to say the word, which was Valiate, and with that, it was lucky for them to find out what exactly happened with the volcano that is in Pyra, and it's being erupted inside. And it's kind of weird because Keyleth knows that the mountain shouldn't be erupted. It shouldn't be inactive. It should have been just dormant. But knowing that there's something wrong, that means something's amiss among the Fire Asari. So, of course, out of grave attempts, she turns into a bird to fly straight ahead, only leaving the team behind. Whereas she literally joins the Fire Asari in the middle of attack of these, like, fire dragon-like serpents. After doing a battle with one of them, it turns out that her father, Corrin, is actually there helping the Fire Asari's defending their location. And sure enough, that he's assuming that Keyleth is there as part of her armante. Of knowing that, hey, I'm going to be, you know, having a leader of a daughter to help me out with this situation. Realizing that she's not really on her armante, she's just literally just there. So, of course, this kind of helps them out by knowing that there's another person that will help them defend the location. And sure enough, when they're brought in front of the rift, she noticed that both Lady Aurora and Kima is helping them out by trying to seal the rift. But she assumed that they were down from the destruction of Iman. But sure enough, it was Lady Aurora that does a quick save on saving not only herself, but also every member that was in that little bubble area. So yeah, that means Sovereign Muriel's family survived the attack and possibly are already on their way to Whitestone. So just in case if you guys are going to be wondering about that. But during their travels, of course, Lady Kima, Lady Alora and Kima saw that the Fire Asari needed their help. So they go and realizing that there's something to miss, because if the dragon that they saw in Iman was indeed the dragon that they faced a long time ago, That means the fire fairies are having some trouble closing up the rift. Meaning that Lady Alora, who wasn't a lady back then, who was simply Alora, and Kima, was literally last members of their own team to battle Thordak before he got sealed away. And it turns out that the item that did seal him away was the Soul Anchor, which is this stone that's attached to, well, literally the soul. They have all of Vox Machina members are continuing battling these creatures, but they only use the magical users against the Rift. Now, as much as it would be possible that Keyleth's trying to seal this Rift with an ice sculpture, ice steel that they do, it fails. As an attempt the way that they wanted to, but this injures her father, making her like realizing that this is the last time she wants to tell her dad the truth, that she didn't travel all this way to, you know, to work on her Aramonte. She literally just traveled to travel. It feels like literally a college kid's just telling you like, "Hi, mom and dad, I just went to college just to have fun." And the parents assume that you just go to college to go to college, which is study and all that. Yeah, plot twist, guys. Not all colleges are like that. Sorry to say that. So, of course, as a means to combat with not only her abilities as a Ashari, a powerful one to be exact, she was able to merge through the gates to, in a weird way, to suffer its primal force and just embrace the, and this is weird by the way, embrace the power that holds inside on the fire plane, which gives her this whole new outlook or this new perspective that she's able to seal the rift on the other side of the realm, pretty much causing it to close up. And sure enough, when she did close up, she emerged as a new need or a new ability, which is basically a fire sari. Because her outfit changed from green to red. And if this was like some sort of a ranger moment, I would say she became the Red Ranger. So, of course, Keyleth, with her new abilities, has been anointed by the headmaster, that he is literally just making sure that, you know, she passed her fire trials, and knowing that something was amiss when it comes down to releasing Thordak, that someone was a fire shard, or assumed to be a fire shard member, that he had to be careful of how she proceeds on people now, because now there's something amiss in trusting people, and she needs to be aware. Sure enough, her dad take keen of how proud she is meeting other people and how being friends with, especially Vaxel Dan, where he just keeps an eye on him like any father should for his daughter. And this also gives Kima and Lady Aurora some R&R while rebuilding the Fire Asari's location before they head over to Whitestone for more of gathering of the forces. It is until the end of the episode that we reveal that Umbrasil is leading an attack on the village and receiving tributes of stolen goods by what people looks what Grog looks like in people. Like people look like orc or Titans or whatever. And sure enough, that Anna Ripley of herself, the one person that we thought we didn't see of in this whole season, appeared out of nowhere, shows up to offer her deal with the dragons.
And on to episode 6, Into Rimcliff. Now, this episode ends the second set of Vox Machina for at least a week until we get new episodes. So bear with me on this one, because this one, just like the last episode of the last set, it was a joygasm, in a way. But, in truthful, it was a very, very highly spoken cliffhanger. So, of course, we open up to Grog fighting into, like, this little death match kind of deal against these gladiators. But, ironically, not realizing this is something that Grog kind of sees, he kind of, like, allows this battle happening. And it turns out that he literally just helps kind of pave way of defeating his friends, his family, in a way, of course, how the depiction of how they did with the gladiators, they did it with this set of thing, revealing that behind him was literally Tavdak. And if you put down a caption on the episode, you would get the name. And this is actually voiced by a gentleman named Ralph Ineson. N-E-S-O-N. So, of course, this fine feverish dream, if you will, becomes a nightmare for Grog as Craven is craving its hunger. So, it's definitely... It's starting to become very noticeable with the team, while Grog's acting, avoidy and helpful and all that, while they trench into snow and all things. And, of course, with Faxel Dan, with his Matrian of Raven problem, Keel is also noticing how he's been doing with the armor on. And it's very weird and everything. So... sure enough, they find themselves in the middle of the forest trying to find this location where Oshisa's mate is. Not far away from them, there's a creature from a distance following them, trying to lure them on many things. So, of course, our first obstacle with the group, we find ourselves with finding a black obelisk. Sorry, it's been a long episode, so bear with me. An obelisk in the middle of the forest, where Percy, first of all, just decides to translate it, realizing that this is like a beware piece, because we see litters of past warriors who have fallen. Sure enough, thanks for Scanlan saving that broomstick, in a way. Vexelia is able to fly in the air to notice that there's more obelisk on the ground, but from a long way, they notice that there's a mountain range. And sure enough, that this is the location of Oshisa's mate is. So they made their way all the way over to the mountain, to finally discovering that it was this hidden passage into the mountain to, pretty much feel like almost as similar as what they felt when they were over at the Slayer's Tank. They're greeted by the Keeper of Knowledge, Camaran Yuj.
Hey guys, listen, there's many things changing to these episodes, so yeah, I'm currently able to be listened to, and get this, I've been able to be listened to Amazon Music now, as well as Apple Podcasts, CastBox,
Google Podcasts with Pocket Cast, Radio Public, a little bit of Spotify, and I actually recently started doing Twitch channels. So yeah, if you could find me through Lone Tech X, you'd be able to see some of my gameplay right there as well. But at the same time, listen to some of my podcasts outside while I'm still delivering some news. Yes, I'm still trying to do other things other than just this, but just for the time being, you can listen to not only this episode, well, all the other past episodes I've done before I've done Twitch. So, once again, you can guys find me at, and this is actually the head page for this, which is anchor.fm/edcast20. That is anchor.fm/edcast. It's literally edcast20, which is edcast20, which you guys can hear me from there. You can look at there and you can leave me a message, as well as find the website that's connected at all. So yeah, here you go. Take care.